Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.
This week on Rewind, your week in review. Republicans and the legislature's Joint Finance Committee stripped a slew of items from Governor Tony Evers' budget during their first votes on the proposal this week.
The budget that we're going to be adopting, I believe, is going to be reasonable, responsible, and realistic.
Evers' appointees have gained the majority on a host of boards, including ones overseeing agricultural policy, natural resources, and the UW system. And Wisconsin's vaccination rate is slowing down as the state surpassed 600,000 total COVID-19 cases since the start of the pandemic. Rewind, your week in review for May 7th.
I'm Brianna Riley.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
This week, the Joint Finance Committee stripped a slew of items from Governor Tony Evers' $91 billion budget proposal. Republican lawmakers removed more than 380 items from the budget, including one to expand Medicaid eligibility to 133% of the federal poverty level, legalize recreational and medicinal marijuana, and overhaul the youth justice system. Removing those items means passing on $2.4 billion in federal funds and $1 billion in general fund tax increases, according to the nonpartisan Legislative Fiscal Bureau. Lawmakers then amended the plan to reflect current spending levels set in the budget that was approved by GOP lawmakers and signed by Evers in 2019. JR, given that Republicans had planned to work off of base anyway, what was the practical point of stripping those 380 items separately from the budget first?
To send a message that they can't come back to the process. So remember, what happens now is that we go agency by agency through this budget of the Joint Finance Committee, and there are motions that are proposed. Those motions, you know, can change spending levels, add policy, change current policy, all kinds of stuff. Democratic members of that committee will propose motions galore through the course of this process to A, deliver a message of where the Democrats are and reflects where Governor Evers' budget was originally, and B, to put Republicans on record opposing these things, especially ones that are popular, like Medicaid expansion. Under committee rules, once you have stripped out a provision from the budget in a motion like what they did yesterday, you can't bring it back. Now, this rule was in place 2 years ago. The chairs at the time, Alberta Darning and John Nygren, who are on the committee, had some leeway with Democrats and allowed them maybe to bring in a motion that had something was referred to. But basically this means they're not going to allow a daily debate about a motion to expand Medicaid, for example, or legalize marijuana or things like that. Now, Democrats, I assure you, will still draft motions that include those provisions in them. What will happen is the chairs can rule them out of order and we move on. But it's to send a message of these things are not coming back, and we Republicans have basically said no to all of these things.
Let's take a step back now and look at the broader revenue picture. So in January, the Legislative Fiscal Bureau released an estimate that showed we'd have $1.9 billion in GPR surplus at the end of this fiscal year, so June 30th. We're obviously waiting for the next estimate in June, which was pushed back slightly because of the income tax deadline extension. After votes this week, JR, do you have a sense of how much money Republicans have to play with in crafting their budget?
Well, what Republicans talked about during the committee hearing on Thursday was about $2.5 billion. And talking to the Fiscal Bureau, officials there said, yeah, they were going to do a quick deep dive to make sure where the numbers were at, but that sounded about the right ballpark. Now, remember, that $2.5 billion is largely because of that surplus from this current fiscal year, which ends June 30th, and the projected revenue growth in the next biennium. Now, part of the calculation that we'll see in these new revenue estimates is taking account a tax cut that Republicans proposed, passed, and Evers signed. There's about $590 million, roughly $600 million. That eats into that bottom line. But the bulk of that, you know, money they have to play with is due to revenue growth, and good things are happening with collections. When I'm looking at monthly collection reports from the Department of Revenue, they all look pretty good so far. The expectation is that when Bob Lang, the director of the Fiscal Bureau, does his next round of estimates, they will be fairly positive. So there could be even more money to play with beyond that $2.5 billion. Another thing that they did this week that was interesting was typically the committee goes through and does, they're called standard budget adjustments. Basically, it's like a cost of living increase for agencies to cover things like rent, employee salaries, and benefits. You do it agency by agency. Instead, the committee did it all in one swoop for basically everybody. And what that means is they have a better handle of what money is there either to spend or put toward tax increases. And I will bet you before this budget is over that they will find a way to cut, to propose at least a tax cut using some of that money.
But we're not expecting that the sort of the June fiscal update will delay the budget process at all, right? I believe the Joint Finance Committee co-chairs Bourne and Markline said during a WMC briefing on Wednesday that if there is a delay, it might be days or weeks, right? We're not expecting to see votes delayed months because of, you know, as we're waiting for these new updates, are we, JR?
Well, it depends on what you think the deadline is. I mean, remember, so in Wisconsin, the fiscal year ends June 30th. But even if there's not a new budget in place July 1st, things go on as is. We're not like the federal government where things shut down without a spending plan. Don't let's see, 2015, things dragged into July. 2017, it was not until September that a budget was done, if I remember correctly, or vice versa. A lot of the budgets run together after a while, after all these years. That said, you know, July 1st is kind of our mental deadline in Capitol of, okay, we should have a new budget in place by then because it's the new biennium. But there's no requirement to have it in place. So you think on the timeline, it's not unusual to see the full legislature voting the budget in the end of June, early July. If it drags into mid-July, it's really not a big deal. It's not when the biennium starts, but it's not really like super, super late. They're not going to get in trouble for it, put it that way.
Closing out this topic, let's hear from Joint Finance Committee Co-Chair Mark Bourne and Democratic Senator John Erpenbach.
The governor's budget is unworkable, unrealistic, and unsustainable. As Wisconsin recovers from the COVID-19 pandemic and government-mandated shutdowns, we do not need a budget like the one the governor has proposed. He includes massive spending increases, large tax increases, and a lot of divisive policy items, as mentioned by my colleague. No Wisconsin business or family would budget the way the governor has, and legislative Republicans will not either.
Everybody benefits from what Governor Evers is proposing in a state budget. The biggest concern I've got today is the Republicans are about to make a generational mistake by saying no to expanding Medicaid. What we're about to see here in the next hour or so when we take our votes on the budget is politically very selfish. It intentionally will harm people of low income. It will intentionally harm people who are not properly documented right now. It's going to harm a lot of people.
Governor Tony Evers' appointments have gained a majority on a host of different boards. In the past week, Evers' appointees have gained the majority on the UW System Board of Regents, the Natural Resources Board, and the DACAP Board, which oversees agricultural policy. Each of those new picks further shifts influence away from former Governor Scott Walker's nominees. All appointees are subject to confirmation by the state Senate. When looking at a membership breakdown at the Board of Regents level, there's 18 members total, 16 of whom are appointees. Evers' picks make up 9 of those 16 slots. In the Natural Resources Board, 4 of the 7 are Evers' nominees. And for the DACAP Board, 6 of the 9 are Evers' picks. JR, with these shifting majorities on these boards, do you expect substantive policy changes to follow?
Well, with DACAP and the DNR Board, they're still subject to legislative review, a lot of what they do in terms of rules. So remember, the way government works is that legislature passes bills, the governor signs them, sometimes not, as we learned in this session. When these laws take effect, agencies have to implement them and fill in the gaps sometimes, you know, implement policies that kind of help define the legislation that or laws on the books. Those efforts by the agencies are subject to legislative review. So for those boards, which have a role in that, they're kind of like have the legislature in the background over their shoulder. What's interesting with the Board of Regents, which still when the Board of Regents does administrative rules, they also have the same thing going on. But the big thing this year is the choice of a new board president. Why is that important? Because that board president is going to appoint somebody to lead the search for the next system president. And that is a big deal. Traditionally, the vice president ascends to the presidency. That vice president is Mike Grebe, who is a longtime GOP attorney. A Walker appointee. So the question is, will the board follow precedence, or will this new dynamic of the board becoming a majority Evers appointees mean that they'll pick somebody else? to become the board president. So that's really maybe the biggest impact we're going to see from this change.
Right, and there have been contested elections, right, for the Board of Regents, yes. You know, president in the past, but it is certainly still a break from precedent if the VP isn't allowed to sort of ascend to the presidency after a year or two, right?
Oh, absolutely. And what you have to watch, too, is, you know, what's important to the EVA's appointees. I mean, the board presidency is one thing. Grebe has talked about already publicly that he would like to appoint an EVA's appointee to lead the search for the system president. That's kind of a bigger deal than who the president of the board is. So maybe that's a little olive branch to those EVA's appointees. Don't forget, too, that Grebe was one in charge of the failed search for a replacement for Ray Cross. Outgoing President Drew Peterson put Grebe in charge of that process. It was very controversial because faculty wasn't playing a role like it had traditionally, that search process. It was a smaller committee. The search didn't go very well. The person they picked pulled out. It was a whole mess. Then Tommy Thompson emerges to come in and kind of step as interim president. But that might be something that people in the board kind of weigh as Grebe runs for the presidency at the June meeting.
Absolutely. Yeah, he did lead that failed search. Anyway, let's move on now to our third topic. Vice President Kamala Harris has touted the proposed infrastructure plan during a stop in Milwaukee this week. Harris repeatedly touted the plan, which is $2.3 trillion. At a UW-Milwaukee roundtable on Tuesday, Republicans in Congress have called for scaling back that figure. The visit was her first to Wisconsin since taking office in January, and Republicans in Wisconsin called it a distraction from what they see as a crisis at the U.S.-Mexico border from a surge of crossings. Harris was picked to lead diplomatic efforts to stem migration. Her appointment was announced by Biden in March. Biden also held this role under the Obama administration, I should note. Also this week, Republican Representatives Tyler August and Jim Steinecke, who visited the southern border this last week, said EVA should send National Guard troops there. JR, since Biden took office in Wisconsin, Wisconsin has seen, you know, Biden make his first official trip to Milwaukee in February. We've now seen Harris 3 months later. Do you expect these visits to ramp up ahead of the midterms?
As long as Harris and Biden are a benefit to Democrats, yes. If they become a hindrance, then no. Because remember, you know, Wisconsin is going to be important to Joe Biden if he seeks re-election in 2024. We are a perpetual swing state. Unless your name is Barack Obama, essentially, you're not winning the state by more than a point or two in November. It's been the case for, you know, two decades. So Biden and Harris will be here, I promise you, between now and 2024, no matter what. As we move toward 2022, the question is, how can they help versus could they hurt? Look, Donald Trump territory, up around the Wausau area, northern Wisconsin, kind of down that western part a little bit, those are places that you might not expect to see a Joe Biden or Kamala Harris because they're not really boosting turnout in that way. They're reminding those voters what they don't like about the Biden-Harris ticket, right? But Milwaukee, key to Biden's prospects in 2024, you expect to see folks there. Madison is a big base for Dems to turn out. The Fox Valley is going to be a key area like it always has. So you might see them more in those places. And again, if they can help people, if Tony Evers runs like we expect him to in 2022, if Joe Biden's a help, he'll probably be here. And also remember, these politicians make calculations for themselves too. In 2012, the recall elections, Barack Obama did not come to Wisconsin to campaign for Tom Barrett against Scott Walker in that recall. I know there were a lot of Democrats unhappy about that, but Barack Obama made a calculation that his prospects of winning in November were more important than helping Tom Barrett with what was an uphill battle to beat Scott Walker in a recall. So he stayed away. Biden will do what's kind of best for him and also what's best for Tony Evers, Ron Kind, you know, go down the list of people who are going to the Senate nominee to face possibly Ron Johnson. If he can help, he'll be here. But if he's going to be a hindrance, maybe he stays away a little bit. Just got to watch that.
Yeah, definitely something to watch in the months ahead. Moving on to our COVID update this week, Wisconsin this week reached a milestone surpassing 600,000 total COVID cases since the start of the pandemic last year. The state's vaccination rate is also slowing, and the Department of Health Services estimates between 1,000 and 2,000 doses are lost each week now, compared to hundreds when vaccinations first opened up. At the federal level, President Biden is now setting a new goal to vaccinate 70% of adults in the U.S. by July 14th. That was previously 80%. The announcement comes with a new administrative strategy to direct states' unused doses to others that are seeing greater demand. The feds are also expected to authorize the Pfizer vaccine to children ages 12 to 15 by early next week, which DHS officials said could bump up, at least in the short term, demand for vaccinations in Wisconsin. Now let's turn to Department of Health Services Deputy Secretary Julie Williams-Van Dyke, who discusses the vaccination slowdown in Wisconsin.
We have seen a drop in demand. And in fact, you know, I would call it a pretty precipitous drop in demand. And it has happened throughout the country. As we add new populations of children, we may see sudden surges in requests for vaccine for a new population. But we will continue to climb this mountain, whether we're on the steep ascent or on the plateau, to keep making sure that everyone in Wisconsin who wants a vaccine receives a vaccine. We're eagerly awaiting the Federal Drug Administration's assessment of the Pfizer application for 12 to 15-year-olds if they do issue an emergency use authorization. And the Advisory Committee on Immunization Practice recommends use of the vaccine in 12 to 15-year-olds. We will be ready to distribute that and support our vaccinators in administering that vaccine.
Moving on to stocks this week, JR, what's rising?
Tommy Thompson, so interim president, University of Wisconsin System. You know, with that failed search we talked about a little while ago for president, Tommy was perhaps the perfect person to step in at a time of need and take over the university. And he got a little bit of a vote of confidence this week from the Evers appointees. So remember, Governor Evers has five region appointees who have not been confirmed yet by the state Senate. One of those appointees has actually been reappointed to the board. It's one of the three that he announced recently. So the Senate Universities Committee had a hearing about these nominations, and a question came from Alberta Darling, one of the Republicans on that committee, of asking, do they plan to keep Tommy around until summer of 2022? Because in theory, if you start a search for a president sometime soon, you're going to need about 6 to 9 months at least to get that process rolling and find somebody. So you're talking about a June board meeting to elect a president. That president appoints somebody to lead the search committee. It fires up sometime late summer, maybe early fall. So you see a picture where, you know, Tommy could be, or there could be a need for a new president until at least sometime next summer. All five of the Evers appointees spoke highly of Tommy Thompson, said he was doing good work, and had good things to say about him. So now the question becomes, what's next, right? A couple of things to remember here. One, Tommy's enjoyed doing this because the boards have a fairly bipartisan kind of approach to things right now. This election for president could be interesting because it could show some partisan divisions on the board. If that comes up, what happens? When Tommy's been asked if he wants to stay on as president, he has said that he serves the pleasure of the board, has deferred to them quite a bit. So there's that factor. Another thing to remember is that, you know, Tommy's coming in at a time when the state legislature has not had a good relationship with the university. Now, that's been true for a long time, to be quite honest with you. Republican lawmakers have not been big fans of the university in various aspects for a long time. Tommy's got a challenge in front of him with his budget. Governor Evers proposed a healthy increase in the University of Wisconsin system. But the impression I've got from talking to people is that lawmakers are not going to embrace that proposal. They're going to get a much smaller increase if they get much of an increase at all. So there's that big question about Tommy with, okay, you're a former Republican governor, Republicans run the legislature, how come you can't persuade these guys to do more? Maybe the better question to ask is, how is he performing compared to somebody else? Would a Ray Cross or a Kevin Riley or Catherine Lyle, they have had a better prospect of convincing his lawmakers to do more with the university than Tommy can? And beyond this interim appointment, you know, I don't get the impression that Tommy is somebody who looked as a permanent replacement at University of Wisconsin system as president, because, you know, look in the past, I think Ray Cross was 6 or 7 years, Kevin Riley was like 9, Catherine Lyle 12. You know, this is kind of like the end of a long public service career for Tommy Thompson. He's going out with, you know, he's enjoying this job, he's embracing it. I don't know that somebody's going to be around for 6 years and do it as a full-time permanent president.
Right. And sort of related to this topic, Senator Roger Roth of the Senate Higher Ed Committee released a report this week prior to this this meeting, right, sort of outlining a proposed restructuring plan for the UW system, for the most part excluding the flagship UW-Madison. But it also mentioned an openness to sort of raising tuition, or at least tying tuition to inflation, or in some way ending the freeze on in-state undergraduate tuition across the UW system. That isn't something necessarily that Tommy Thompson, as UW system interim president, has been, you know, publicly advocating for. We saw some interest a little bit last session from Representative Dave Murphy, who, you know, chairs the Assembly Higher Ed Committee. He proposed a number of bills that would sort of look at implementing cohort pricing and getting rid of the freeze. But JR, do you sense that there's really any appetite in the legislature for, you know, raising undergraduate tuition for the first time in at least 6 years, right, and tying it to inflation, especially just coming out of the COVID-19 crisis?
Well, there are a couple of things that are hurting the university in that regard. One, there are Republicans who are unhappy that University of Wisconsin says it wasn't more in person during the pandemic. Look, there are some parents who feel like they didn't get the best value of their dollar, their kids being in school during the pandemic, right? So that's a hindrance to them. One thing to note that's interesting, though, if I remember correctly, the last freeze was put in a law in the current budget, which runs through June 30th, only covered through this school year. To implement a new freeze, you have to add it to the budget. By going to base budget, what they did yesterday, you don't have a freeze in place right now as part of that budget. They have to add it in. Now, I am not suggesting at all that Republicans are going to, like, just not put it back. But there's at least an opening for advocates of allowing universities to begin raising tuition again to make that case for the budget is done. Again, I don't think the prospects are great for it from the calls that I've made, but you never know. And one thing I also know about Ross' report, it's really interesting. There's been talk about the University of Wisconsin system and efficiencies and trying to move things around and closing campuses, all these for years. The system, as somebody told me one time, it was made to be indestructible. And why I say that is that, you know, a lot of these campuses, like, okay, look, the big campuses, Madison, Milwaukee, they're in big urban areas. Places like River Falls, they're not. And those are good paying jobs in rural districts that Republicans happen to represent. And if you make a case about consolidation or about paring back those good-paying jobs in those districts, it gets a little bit of a interesting conversation. I don't know how that's going to play out going forward, but it's something to keep in mind about just how challenging it could be to do things like that, to close a campus. I mean, and that's been mentioned over the years I've been here about that possibility, but I've never seen a really strong push to take a step like that, again, because it's a little bit scary sometimes to think about cutting something like that in your own district.
Right. And 2 or 3 years ago, we had the same sort of conversation when the Board of Regents proposed and adopted its own restructuring plan to sort of make the create satellite campuses basically around the major four-year institutions as sort of a cost-saving measure. There was really no cost analysis done at the outset, so I'm not really sure how that's going. but this has been an ongoing conversation right over the years. It's just interesting to see it sort of introduced in this way in a legislative report, you know, from you know, former Senate president.
There's been talk about, like, looking at the tech college system and University of Wisconsin. Are there efficiencies that could be created there? I mean, there are all kinds of mountains that could be moved in theory, but I don't know if they have the strength to move them right now.
Mm-hmm. Let's move on now to Mixed.
So Edmund Manny Deeds. So we talked about Grebe before. Well, Edmund Manny Deeds is an Evers appointee on the Board of Regents. He told us this week that he's thinking about running for president. I think he's doing more than thinking about it. But that said, you know, it sets up the possibility of a contested election. Now, in politics, sometimes we make assumptions based on, like, politics, right? Like, oh, those are Walker appointees, ergo they will vote for the Walker appointee for president. These are Evers appointees, ergo they'll vote for the Evers person for president. I don't want to say it clean right now. One of the five people went to that hearing this week mentioned that he hoped there would be an uncontested election and that Grebe would stay on because that's been tradition. That opened some eyes because here you have an Evers appointee talking about Grebe, a Walker person, staying on as president. At the same time, if you go back and look at the April meeting, there's a movement that was made by some Walker folks. I think it's Drew Peterson, the president, to have the vote for president at the June meeting be an open ballot rather than like a secret ballot. That drew blowback, not from Evers appointees so much as from Walker appointees saying, no, that's not how we've done things before. Well, that raises the kind of speculation, does that mean that there are some Walker appointees who don't want to vote for Grebe? Now, you also have these five appointees who went before the elections committee, or sorry, the university committee this week. They probably won't be confirmed before June. Roger Roth asked all five if they were going to support Grebe, essentially, and support precedents to try and keep the board above politics. That was kind of the way he couched it. Only the one appointee or nominee said yes, he was going to support Grebe. The other four said, are going to think about it. Roth had asked him, hey, would you mind getting back to me in writing about your thoughts on this after you thought about it some more? Well, that struck some people as kind of odd, because does that mean it's going to be hanging over their heads about they might not get confirmed, like Grebe has to become president or they might not get confirmed? Now, I'm not saying that Roger Roth is going to do something like that, but it's got to be the back of their minds a little bit. And I was assured that that's not really what's going on. It's just he wanted to hear their thoughts on this. But there's that level of intrigue to all this. And again, Grebe oversaw the failed search. He's got that to contend with. And one of the takeaways I think of this is for both Edmund Manning Deeds and Grebe, Mike Grebe, is they shouldn't rely on either past practice or on politics to assure themselves winning this thing. If they want it, they should go out and be lobbying these regions across the aisle to make sure that they're the one that gets the job. And, you know, it could be an interesting thing to watch it play out if it does create a partisan split on that board.
Definitely. And we'll be watching for that next month when the Board of Regents meets. What's falling this week, JR?
Election bills. So, like, there's been a push by Republicans for ever since the end of the 2020 election to overhaul election policies in Wisconsin, because they've heard it from their base that there is suspicion about how the election was run in 2020, that, you know, there are all these things that are off to them that they're, and some of it's, you know, it's conspiracy theory, baseless stuff. Let's be honest. President Trump just put out a statement today saying, asking about the vote dump, quote unquote, in Wisconsin at 3:42 a.m. There was no vote dump in Wisconsin. There was a completion of counting absentee ballots at central count locations like Milwaukee. That's all it was. But it feeds in the conspiracy theory that something went wrong. Now you have all these bills floating the Capitol trying to change policies. Number one, Governor Evers is going to veto those things, right? He's made clear that anything in his mind that reigns in the right to vote, he is not going to allow happen. But now we've got this Republican tension that's been percolating beneath the surface blowing out into the open this week. There's a couple of bills that were on, going to be voted on a committee this week. They were pulled because of questions about some language in there. Steve Noss, Republican from Whitewater, put out a statement calling on GOP leadership to have a vote one day next week on eight election bills. He wants them on the floor now, no excuses, he says. And he complained about them getting interference or resistance from the committee chair. Didn't call it Kathy Brenner by name, but make clear he's talking about her. Well, Kathy did not take that too kindly. She noted that election law takes time to get it right, and basically said a career politician, to use her words, like Steve Noss should know that. So there you have a little bit of like a tit for tat among Republicans on a very sensitive issue. And here's the thing about this. There is a tension among Republicans about this very thing. They're feeling pressure from their base to get something done, because that base and talk radio is saying you got to do something about this, because we want to feel confident about the elections because we think that something's wrong. The problem is that some of these ideas maybe aren't for prime time, and there are people like Bernier saying, look, we need to pump the brakes and make sure it's done right. Yeah, Governor Evers is going to veto this, but if it did become law, it should work properly. Let's look at one of the bills that was pulled this week, for example. There's this whole thing with voting in assisted living facilities. There were allegations that, you know, residents were pressured by staff to vote a certain way, et cetera, et cetera. One of the bills would address that situation, make it a felony to pressure somebody to either A, request a ballot, or B, how they vote if they're in an assisted living facility. There was a substitute amendment that was put out this past week before the vote in committee that added some provisions. One of them was it would require local clerks, after they got ballots from an assisted care facility, to basically take and examine 10% of those ballots and try and contact those voters to make sure that they, A, intended to cast that ballot and reach out to them. If they didn't get back to them, it would still count. The vote would still be counted. But if the person said, no, I didn't get any count, cast that ballot, it'd be pulled out. Well, you know, there's some concern that clerks, that this is a lot of work to be adding into in a busy season. Now, the blowback from others is like, hey, clerks are hiring people and they can find time to cure absentee ballots. like they did this past election. They can make some phone calls about this. But it just shows you that, that there's that tension there among Republicans about how to approach this issue. And oh, by the way, Democrats are enjoying this because, one, it's Republican on Republican violence going on, right? B, they have the opportunity to say, look, Governor Evers is your last line of defense to stop a Georgia or a Florida-style bill becoming law in Wisconsin. That excites their base because voting rights are a big deal for the Democratic base and reminds them why next fall is so important. So it's a lot of, like, you know, intrigue and flame passion in the Capitol right now, but that's the kind of stuff we enjoy watching.
That's right. And meanwhile, the Assembly Elections Committee is continuing on with its, I guess, investigation, right? Looking into allegations of, I suppose, fraud, right? In these, especially in these five cities or five counties that received private funding. So we'll keep an eye on both of those things as they progress. Thank you so much, JR, and thank you everyone for tuning in. I'm Brianna Riley.
And I'm JR Ross.
And that's Rewind for May 7th.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.